It's 10:22 p.m. in Sherman, Wyoming, and you're listening to Night Call. Hello and welcome to Night Call, a call-in show for our dystopian reality. My name is Emily Yoshida. I am in Los Angeles for once. And with me on the other line, of course, are
Molly Lambert and
Tess Lynch. Hello.
Hello. Nice to be back on the same coast with you guys.
Welcome back.
And happy belated birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
I mean, I got the best gift of all of the last hour of October 1st. If you know, you know. Speaking of, I feel like I was thinking of this because, you know, obviously I was like, oh, we have our show the next day, like when the Trump COVID news was breaking. And I was like, man, this is like the definition of an evolving story. I don't even feel like we can say anything about it because it'll probably be outdated by the time this episode comes out on Monday. So in the meantime, we're just going to take a bunch of night calls this week.
Hell yeah.
We have some really good ones coming up. So thank you to all of our listeners who called in and wrote in these past couple weeks. But first, I just wanted to talk to you guys or just give a little bit of a report from the road from my travels, because on my trip back from Iowa, I had a pyramid heavy trip. And by pyramid heavy, I mean I saw two pyramids.
That's a lot of pyramids for one trip, to be honest.
Yeah, and all west of the Mississippi. So I was plotting out my route, as I have been doing every time I hit the road again, and looking for things to see off of I-80 in Wyoming, which was a big chunk of the route that I took, you know, consulting Wyoming travel guides and stuff, and found the Ames Monument, which I'd never heard of before, but it's a pyramid that it was built. It's now, you know, just south of I-80, but it dates back to obviously before the interstate system, but it was a stop on the Transcontinental, the Union Pacific Railroad. It was once the highest point on the Union Pacific Railroad. It's something at like 8,247 feet above sea level. So it's very bizarre. This is a treeless, you know, windswept plain in Wyoming, just outside of Laramie. And there's a dang pyramid there. So I was like, I got to see this pyramid. I got to see about this pyramid.
How big is it?
It's about the size of a small house, I would say.
A modest pyramid.
Yeah, a modest pyramid. You know, you can walk around it and you could probably walk around it in less than a minute, I would say.
Is there a person in it?
Well, there's two people on it. So the Ames Monument is a monument to Oakes and Oliver Ames. By the way, you can name somebody Oakes, and that's Oakes, O-A-K-E-S. That's like a very Brooklyn child name. But Oakes and Oliver Ames, who were the this is off of the Wyoming Historical Society's website. They were financiers and politicians whose business skills were largely responsible for the completion of the Transcontinental Railroad. They were also later revealed to be hucksters and fraudsters when it came to the financing of that Transcontinental Railroad. It was sort of interesting to read a little bit about the Transcontinental Railroad, because at the time it was like, people have compared it to like how people talk about going to Mars now. It's just like impractical. Like, nobody needs that. That's massively, like, what a waste of money. And that's just sort of funny to think about now. So they had this monument. I'm not sure who commissioned it, if it was them, but it was designed by Henry Hobson Richardson. He's an architect around that time, and it's got their heads on it. It's got these bas relief heads. And at first I thought it was like Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, which wouldn't have not made sense because it was built largely during his presidency. But it's really weird. It's just this sort of, it's not a direct triangle like the Egyptian pyramids. It's more of a ziggurat, I would say. It's kind of got this flat-ish top, and kind of two layers on it. We'll link to it so people can check it out, or you can just Google Ames Monument.
Yeah, it looked rad. Did you get out and like walk around?
Yeah, so it's very close to the interstate, but it's all just dirt roads to get there. And they're really, really rough dirt roads. So I was like dragging my little car through this dirt road to get to the pyramid, and nobody's around. Also, there was a fire that day. And I think continues to be a fire, the Mullen Fire in Wyoming. So it was really ominous out.
It looked just so apocalyptic when you posted a picture, and it looked very much like hell.
It felt like hell. It was crazy. The wind was so strong that like I had to be careful. This has happened to me before in strong wind where like the car door has slammed on my leg with a high wind, but it was like that. It was my hat was literally blowing off of my head, and I had to go chasing after it like I was in an old timey cartoon. But it was very dramatic. I took some pictures, and I don't know if there's a body in there. There should be a body, but it was like a big tourist trap. Like they would get out because the Transcontinental Railroad was so long, they had to switch out engines halfway through the journey. So, or probably a multiple stops on the journey. So that was one of the switching places. And so everybody had to get out of the train, and they would switch out the engine, and people would walk around and check out the pyramid. Like that was the activity. And then they moved the railroad like 3 miles to the south, and the little town that had sprung up there, Sherman, Wyoming, became a ghost town. So I think there's just a cemetery there. That's all that's left of it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that was not the only pyramid that you saw.
Yeah. So around Salt Lake City, I transitioned from the Interstate 80 to 15, which goes through Las Vegas, Nevada, Sin City. And I made a little detour just to check out the Luxor, because I had been seeing rumors that they're going to be demolishing the Luxor, possibly. This is not confirmed officially, but sources say that MGM is considering tearing down the Luxor as part of their general push to de-theme their Vegas properties, which is bullshit. They don't know what they got. The themed casinos are all the best. I think this is the official night call stance.
Totally.
People want to party in a pyramid.
100%.
You can still put your super clubs in a pyramid.
Yeah. I don't think is there a club at Luxor? I don't think there is.
I feel like there's a club in all of them. I just watched From Dusk Till Dawn, which ends with a reveal that the club, the titty bar, is really in an Aztec pyramid at the end.
Ooh.
And it reminded me that when I went to Tijuana last time, we saw there was like a club in the shape of an Aztec pyramid that looked amazing. We're all for pyramids, real and fake.
Yeah.
Why are they getting rid of the themed casinos? Why?
It's just a vestige of the 90s.
Yeah, they did a family-friendly phase in the 90s where they were like, we're going to be bigger than Disney World. Families are all going to come to Las Vegas, so we're going to put all this family-oriented stuff. And then in the 2000s at some point, they were like, fuck that, we're going back to like adults who want to drink and do drugs and get laid.
Why are they assuming that adults don't like themes? Also, they could still be bigger than Disney because Disney might be going down. So somebody's got to stick around for a theme.
Yeah, like the Excalibur needs to stay there. Like it's probably the only thing that's like it's single-handedly holding Las Vegas together, that castle.
They also, they just blow up casinos every once in a while. It's like a publicity stunt as much as anything else. It's like, hey, we're blowing up this thing that was falling into disrepair, and we're just going to build a whole new one to generate promo.
Some might say it is the biggest display of excess in Las Vegas that regularly happens, because it's just like, what? Reuse a building? Like, rehab it? Fuck no. Let's tear it down and build a new one.
I've always said, too, that like if they had let some of the casinos that they did blow up, like the Sands, if they had just kept them around and refurbed them, they would now be like, people would love like a Rat Pack casino.
Yeah.
It's kind of stunning that there's not really a Rat Pack themed casino in Las Vegas. Like, I think maybe like the Cromwell, which is a relatively new and kind of smaller casino, is maybe in that zone. But there's not like an all out like Las Vegas, like 50s Las Vegas themed casino, which feels like a major oversight. That's like all that anybody wants.
That's what Fremont Street is for.
But yeah, I mean, there's the de-theming has been happening, particularly with the MGM properties. The Monte Carlo shut down, I think, sometime last year or maybe even back as far as 2018. And now it is Park MGM. So it's just like blandly fancy MGM. I mean, at least they didn't tear down the Monte Carlo. Like, they just rebranded it because it wasn't that distinctive of a building or a structure, not like a pyramid or something. But yeah, this rumor has been posted on Vital Vegas, which is like a Las Vegas insider blog. And the writer is Scott Robin. And he said, and this is all according to like insiders, but the company has long felt its hands are tied by the distinctive but limiting Egyptian theme of the Luxor. And company officials have discussed demolition of both Luxor and Excalibur for at least 5 years, but have been unable to proceed due to union contracts. And it's possible that the COVID-19 shutdown has paved the way for what's to come for Luxor. So, yeah.
Everybody COVID. Likes Luxor here at Night Call.
I've only been to Las Vegas one time, but if you guys like it, I do.
I mean, they shoot a beam into space that you can see from space. Like, yeah. Why would you get...
And it attracts all the bats and bugs.
And they die in the beam. The inside of Luxor is one thing. There are some things that obviously feel like, I mean, tacky in a lovely way, in a way that I love. But like, as far as thinking about what like investors and money Vegas people think, the structure of the Luxor just feels timeless to me. It's so cool. It's just undeniably awesome. And I just don't know why you would get, like, it's a structure that defies logic. Like, you have to have a special elevator to go up and down it. It should be protected as a historical, like, architecturally significant building, I think. But they don't care about such things in Sin City.
If you have any pyramid sightings you'd like to call in about for our new segment, Pyramid Pals.
Yes.
Leave us a night call at 240-46-NIGHT with the details of your pyramid sighting. Also, if anyone has been to the pyramids in Egypt, I would love to hear about that.
Oh, please do call in about that. I've always wanted to go.
Yeah, number one dream destination. But if we can't get to Egypt, I would also accept the Bass Pyramid in Memphis.
Ooh, yeah. The Bass Pro Shop. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's all night calls all the time. Stay tuned. We are back, and we are going to take a night call about the QAnon pipeline.
Hey, Night Call. I have a story about an old roommate who pretty much fits the bill for the hippy-dippy to QAnon pipeline. In college, I'd say, like, probably the most, I guess hindsight is 2020, but she was always very much like a chameleon, so she kind of adapted to whatever group of people we were around. But after college, we kind of lost touch, and then, like, within the span of 2 years, she had moved from Miami to Costa Rica with a man who's like double her age, had a baby with him, was like going on yoga retreats in other countries. It was just a total flip in lifestyle. She was very much like party girl. And then I follow her on Instagram, and she starts posting like all this kind of wellness stuff, like yoga, like, I don't know, appreciating the earth, like a lot of stuff about like natural healing, sound healing, and like eating raw and organic foods, everything in that arena. And then she started posting Instagram stories from an account called Red Pill Babe. And I was just like, oh God, what is this? And it's just a full on QAnon account, like full of like anti-vax stuff, anti-mask stuff, and save the children. And yeah, I think it's too late for her. And I don't know, I go back and forth between like feeling bad about like me not doing anything about it. Like, could I have helped her? And then also, like, is she well-meaning? I would like to think so. I don't know. It just seemed to happen so fast. It's very crazy. But I can email you guys as well and share links to some of the YouTubes because they're honestly a little bit, it seems scary. It's just because it's very dangerous. So, yeah, I don't know. It's very conflicting and it's just sad to see kind of happen before your eyes. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the show so much. I've been loving it these past couple months. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this sounds pretty classic. This sounds like the what you were describing, Molly, like the Instagram influencer or wannabe influencer who just gets full red-pilled somehow.
Well, I think it's really the anti-vax thing is sort of the connection. But also once you bring in Save the Children, everybody's like, oh, I want to save the children.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've used this term before. I've meant to, but conspiritual is one.
Ooh.
But I for a second listening to this, I was like, are we talking about the same person? But I think it's a different person. But I also know someone for a time, I don't know, maybe like 5 years ago, I knew a few people who moved to Costa Rica for yoga, as if that were something a lot of people were doing. But I guess it was.
Birthplace of yoga.
Costa Rica. But they were all kind of like upper middle class people who were doing yoga as like a full-time job and wanted to go a little bit off the grid and were really drawn to Costa Rica for that reason. I think all of them moved back after a little while, but some of them also have similar kind of like, I don't think anyone I know is bold enough to go full QAnon on the socials, but definitely like the anti-vax stuff is in there. But that makes me wonder if there's some weird community of yogis in Costa Rica who are kind of doing the QAnon thing.
I'm very interested in the kind of like what it is about being in that kind of community or like subscribing to a certain kind of lifestyle that just makes you more susceptible to buying into some of this stuff or just like not critical about a lot of stuff in a way.
I think it's like you're being open-minded in a certain way and, you know, with a lot of spirituality stuff, it's like you're opening yourself up to a certain amount of woo-woo stuff.
Yeah.
And then who's waiting to tell people that are getting into that stuff what else is going on?
Yeah.
Do you guys think, though, that you can ever reason with a person who's gone? I mean, or do you think at any point in the evolution of being a sort of like spiritual person who's dabbling in some weird ideas and then they end up going full QAnon, is there any point or any kind of strategy you could use to step in along that progression and say like, hey, I'm your friend, don't do this?
There's been a lot of guides about how to get people out of QAnon. Jamie Loftus was posting about this the other day because I think she said she had some family members who she was trying to get off the QAnon thing. I do think it's possible to bring people back. Is what I think.
I think the thing to emphasize with a QAnon person in your life, and I don't have any that I know of right now, but I think the thing that I have a little bit of sympathy or empathy for QAnon people about is just like, yeah, of course, like people in power are fucked up and corrupt and are doing horrible things. It's just like, you're so close, you know, like just like look 5 inches to the right or something. And then, you know, there is something there. Like your instincts, your broad instincts are correct. It's like a lack of criticism. It's a lack of, I think, doing your own research in a way. Although I think probably a lot of people would say like, I've done a lot of my own research. But I think to acknowledge that the overall tendency, it is justified, is maybe a good way to start with people, because I think to just say, you're crazy, none of this stuff is true, how could you think that? I mean, it's very easy to imagine how people could think that. That's the scary thing about QAnon. For me, I can totally see, God, I was like, when I was in Iowa, I started to believe in chemtrails for 5 seconds. Like, it's very easy for me to understand how people go down this path, because I was just like, I looked up and there was just like suddenly so many trails in the sky. And I was like, we're in the middle of Iowa and no planes are flying. There should not be anything here. How am I seeing like seven? And then I was just like, oh, I think they're just flying at a altitude, particular altitude or whatever.
I think what's really seductive about QAnon too is it provides like a universal theory for all these things where they all go together.
Yeah.
But it is also difficult to explain to people because a lot of it runs parallel to stuff that is real, especially when the Epstein stuff started coming out. It was like, oh, there is a secret cabal of pedophiles that have state power and are using it to traffic children.
Yeah.
But it makes you feel crazy to be like, but it's not happening out of Comet Pizza.
I think
it's happening on a private island that is terrifying.
Yeah. I think also, like, maybe there's a part of the QAnon mindset that's like, nobody's willing to acknowledge shit this dark. But I think maybe you could sell a QAnon person on the idea that the actual darkest thing is that nothing is connected. Like, that's the most, like, hopeless, desolate place to be. It's just like, there is a lot of bad, dark shit happening in the world, and a lot of it has nothing to do with each other. Like, it's just the way that the world is, and that sucks, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think with some of these things, too, it's like people kind of get off on being told that nobody believes them. There's something about the, like, I'm the only one who has this secret information, and I'm trying to tell other people, but they won't listen to me. It also just, like, provides people with a feeling of purpose. We've talked about how it's almost like a religious thing at this point, that it doesn't matter whether it's like makes sense or not. It's just sort of like a devotion.
Yeah. So if you can introduce it as like a like rebelling against a church to your QAnon friends, maybe that'll hold some water, since the entire QAnon thing is like what I've been told. You know, is all wrong, and I had no idea. My eyes are open now. You can do that again within QAnon.
I personally don't think I could ever try to convince someone that they were wrong about QAnon unless they tried to convert me. But that's only because anecdotally, I think that there's such, I mean, it's right now there's like a logical, like people are going on their own logic over there. And so it's hard because you think that, I don't know, I would be worried that by trying to bring someone back from that, it would almost work against me and make them even more sure that they were correct and dig in their heels. Like, I almost think that kind of saying like, oh, that doesn't interest me, but like, you do you. I mean, is that irresponsible to let someone fall off their own cliff in that way?
Weren't you saying you explained it to your neighbor who didn't know what it was the other day? Yeah.
So the other, I love my neighbors so much. My neighbors are older and they don't use the internet, and they like to call and talk about politics, and we agree on most things. But yeah, my neighbor had never heard of QAnon, and so I took about 20 minutes to explain it to her, and she could not believe that a single person on planet Earth would believe it. And I was like, no, a lot of people do. And then we had a good laugh, and then I got off the phone and I was like, oh God, oh no, this is so depressing.
What if you indirectly red-pilled her?
Yeah, right. No, no.
She went to go do some research after that. And like, you got to be careful.
If you ever want to have me explain QAnon to you, though, you can also be sure that like there's a lot of total misinformation where I'm like, I'm not sure about this. I'm just going to throw it out there. But yeah, I mean, most people, as we talk about a lot on the podcast, are not on Twitter, so they don't really know about a lot of stuff that we think everyone does.
Yeah. Well, got to watch out for those red pill babes.
Ha. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. Should we take another night call?
Yeah.
This one is our first, as far as I know, night call from Australia. Very excited about this one. Let's roll it.
Hi, night call. My name is Rabia. I use she, her pronouns. Calling you from Australia. Just wanted to say about Tess's, I think, conspiracy theory that the AQI is wrong. I don't think you need to call that a conspiracy theory. I'd say you're probably right that it is wrong. I just wanted to tell you what we learned here from going through the same situation over Christmas. Often it is wrong. We just figured this out gradually, because some days you'd wake up and the official government AQI would say, air quality good. You'd look outside, nah. All your senses would just tell you, nah, that's wrong. And what we gradually figured out was that basically there's never been a need for the AQI to be, it's never been this important before, it's never been disseminated to this many people, it's never changed this often. But the government data sometimes would be like either 24 hours behind or averaged out from a bunch of different stations, or the stations just weren't in, there weren't very many of them, or they weren't working very well, like all kinds of things. And like you'd have different apps on your phone sourcing the information from different places, it'd tell you different things. And you look outside, your senses would tell you something else. So what we figured out was Purple Air is the one you want to use, because that's like, it's kind of like an open source sort of thing. And Purple Air's AQI readings comes from people's houses. They've got their own devices monitoring the air quality that update all the time. They'll tell you what's really going on. That's the only site you want to use. Everywhere else, it's just not worth it. I mean, I really, really feel for all of you. We went through the exact same thing not long ago, and good luck breathing for the next couple of weeks, months. That's pretty rough. The thing, I guess it's a small example of what we learned generally, what we've learned from both the fires and the pandemic, is that the government will always do a worse job than people. Like, always rely on the community, on people, on rather than anything official. You'll always get better results that way. That's what we learned. Anyway, cheers.
Thank you so much. I'm looking at Purple Air right now. I mean, the thing with the AQI thing is that I always assumed it was sort of like the temperature in a given place. Like, it's depending on where you are, like also the environment you're around. Like, if you're around more trees or more asphalt, like there's going to be some variance. And
I don't know, though, when we talked about it, it was we had just come off of the dangerous AQI days where we were seeing things in, like, I think the 150s and above. And then and some of those days, by the way, did not feel as bad as they were being reported. But out of an abundance of caution, I at least just stayed inside. But then after a number of those days, the AQI went down into moderate range. And there was no way that was moderate. And I live in a pretty like dense urban area of Los Angeles. There are a lot of trees, but it's also, there's a lot of apartments and stuff. So you would assume that that would be like the more reliable data, I guess. But it seemed very unreliable. So I appreciate Purple Air, that recommendation. But I also think it's very interesting and totally correct to point out that this pandemic has definitely taught us that community is more reliable and kind of a better resource often than government stuff.
Especially when it comes to environmental things, I would say. Like, I've been wanting, we should table this, but like, I want to note this right now. Maybe we can take some night calls about it. Like, one of the most depressing things I think of this year has been more or less confirming the fact that recycling doesn't exist for a large part. And that's, you know, been completely something that's been pushed by state and local governments, that, you know, recycling is the way that you do your part. And I think that there are certain things that, you know, that are we just talked about QAnon. I don't want to go full into like, don't trust anything that an institution or a government tells you. But I think right now it's fairly safe to say that anything related to the environment and climate change and all of that is suspicious at best.
It also just does make one feel like you have to run around being like, QAnon is fake, so is recycling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that was a big story. It was buried because there's so many other stories. But yeah, plastic recycling, single-use plastic recycling was basically invented by oil companies, as was the term carbon footprint.
Mm-hmm.
It was made up by oil companies.
Yeah.
To try and take the blame off the fact that it's the oil companies who need to reduce their carbon footprint, not individuals quite so much.
Yeah.
I'm really excited that we are building solidarity with Australia.
Yeah.
Here at Night
Yeah.
Call, because
they went through it. That was.
Yeah.
Was that end of 2019 or 2018 that those fires were happening in Australia?
There's,
it was really bad.
There's just a lot of similarity between Australia and California. I think Australia is like England's California. It's like a prison planet where they sent all the convicts, and it has huge problems with racism and a beach culture and fires. So I really feel like that community, what you were talking about, could be, you know, sharing information across international lines about, you know, helping each other through something that clearly the government is not equipped to help people with.
Yeah.
Is good. And I agree with the caller that sometimes you just have to listen to your nose, as mm-hmm. they might say, when you go outside and smell smoke, even if the AQI says it's okay. If you smell smoke, trust your instinct.
Yeah. I mean, again, I was in Laramie when this fire that was had been about 25,000 acres jumped to 35,000 acres, maybe 40 miles away from where I was. The entire sun, like the entire sky got browned out. It wasn't even the red sun anymore at a point. It was just dark. And everything smelled like fire, you know, just classic fire stuff. And my my weather app said that the air quality was good. I think it was something like at a 30 or 40 on there. So, you know, I figured that was also because they probably didn't have as many monitors in Wyoming, maybe, as they do in Los Angeles. But I don't know. But that felt fairly obvious that the air was full of smoke.
I have definitely been using Purple Air because, like the caller said, it has a lot of local sensors. Although, again, I've started to become totally paranoid that none of it's real because sometimes it still feels like it'll be nicer or less nice outside than the number.
Yeah. Well, should we take a night email? Perhaps this one from Joe?
Let's do it. Hi, Night Call. I recently came across the Futel Payphone project with tie-ins to the Willamette Dream project. This seems like a harmless public art project, but it is extremely creepy. I have attached a link to a Reddit post about the project. The original poster has a video of him using one of payphones and recording to hear what happens when you pick up one of the phones. The phone is free and offers options to do things such as press 2 to apologize, whatever the heck that means. The phones offer an option to record yourself telling your dreams for something called the Willamette Dream Project, which this guy seems to think could be MKUltra adjacent. Like I said, who knows if this is just a weird art project or something more sinister, but it reeks of Night Call. I figured this could be a cool discussion. Would even be willing to visit the one in Detroit and record my own experience for you guys. Just let me know. I'm in Ohio.
I asked Joe if Joe felt like it, would they please go to the Detroit phone? But it's very strange. The link to the Reddit post that Joe attached was, there are these flyers. This one was found in Kingston, Ontario, I believe. There's a cicada in the bottom right, which the poster thought may be a link to the cicada 3301 project, which was like a kind of like weird puzzle, like an internet puzzle from a few years ago. But the flyer says, have you been having strange dreams? The Kingston Dream Survey is investigating a recent spike in bizarre, unexplainable dreams since the arrival of COVID-19. If you have been experiencing any unusual dream activity, you can help by reporting a summary with a phone number, asking for a description of the dream. And then, yeah, there's a phone in Detroit. There's a link to a company named Futel that places free payphones around like lower income neighborhoods. The whole thing just seems really, really suspect and like it is probably motivated by something not good. There's not a lot of information.
Really? Do you guys really think that it's strange to ask people to share their dreams anonymously?
It's not just that, though. Apparently, the prompts are strange. And I think putting them in like low income neighborhoods, and some people think it's like a data mining thing. But it's all so dense. It's like one of those rabbit holes that takes forever to like get to any actual information. There's like a lot of videos in this Reddit post that we will link to in our show notes. Yeah, someone says it's to do with a September 5th cult, a Reddit cult predicting something bad would happen on September 5th, which was posted like a month ago. Obviously, I'm sure many bad things happened on September 5th. many bad things happen every day now.
Yeah, we have money down on like every corner of the roulette wheel as far as bad things happen.
Oh, yeah.
I've been saying you could do a We Didn't Start the Fire for just every single day.
Yeah,
you certainly could. There's also a link to something called the Church of Robotron, by the way. In this, this was a hot tip and very weird. If any of our listeners have any information about these weird phones, please let us know.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, any payphone is going to seem a little mysterious because there just aren't that many left of them.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime you see a payphone in the wild and it's functional, it feels a little wild. I mean, it looks like these are built out of existing, like AT&T or Bell telephone booths, the Futel ones.
They're those Doctor Who things. They take you to a TARDIS.
We don't have the full like booth though in the States for the most part. I feel like your legs are exposed. Yeah, your legs get left behind.
It's very hard to change into your superhero costume.
It is, unless it's just changing shirts.
The site, I'm on the Futel site, which is at futel.net. And also, if anybody, I have a suspicion that somebody who works on this listens to Night Call. This just is like a little vibe that I have.
But really? They
say, yeah, I don't know. It feels very Night Call. At Futel, we believe in the preservation of public telephone hardware as a means of providing access to the agora for everyone. And toward that goal, we are privileged to provide free telephone calls, voicemail, and telephone-mediated services. All services, including telephony and human interaction, are free from any Futel telephone. The thing that makes me just think this is an art project is if you really want to do some data mining, like Google is doing this and in a way that people would actually use it at, you know, at scale. You know, we use it for our night calls. You know, for all we know, Google is using the conspiracies and otherwise strange stories that people are sending to us on the night call voicemail. And I don't know, MK Ultraing it. I have no idea. Like, that's more likely to, this just feels so small and niche that I'm like, what are they actually doing? How many people are actually using these things every day? I don't know.
I'd like to recommend an Instagram account that is not related to Futel, but is on a similar note called The Call Center.
Ooh.
On Instagram, it's the_call_center, which is, I believe, an art project based around the idea that there's like a phone that they want you to call and that they're listening to your calls. Everybody should check it out. It's sort of like an art project about this things like this conspiracy. I don't think it is itself an actual conspiracy, but it's incredibly Night Call. And I'm a big fan of the call center.
Nice. Call center, come on Night Call.
I'm going to call this number. I just, the one, the Kingston flyer. Yeah. I want to call. I'm very interested because I think, like, again, this is another thing going back to the QAnon thing, like a lot of things that are art can be interpreted as being satanic or, you know, CIA adjacent or something with the right lens. Like, I can totally imagine a conceptual artist setting up a voicemail with, you know, weird or impressionistic prompts about people's dreams. And I think that could actually be really interesting. Like, that sounds like something I would do maybe if I had a lot of spare time and I was a conceptual artist. Like, that's the kind of thing I'm interested in.
Oh, totally. I mean, I'm skeptical as to whether or not it's data mining, but if you read through the whole Reddit thread, there are mentions of like calling Border Patrol and stuff that just seems like if it is a conceptual art piece, maybe it's like doesn't have the best intentions.
They call Border Patrol. Wait, who calls Border Patrol?
I think it's like, I just closed the tab, so hold on. Here, so partway down the Reddit thread, someone said that they left this comment on one of the videos that's exploring what this is. When we called the Futel phone service thing, they mentioned the Church of Robotron and gave options for different sermons. There was also an option called Hold the Phone and eventually takes you to someone saying, choose your adventure, and this weird music very loud with someone saying something in the background with a series of numbers that we can't hear. I also watched a video of someone calling from a Futel phone booth with an option for concentration camps, and when he pressed for that, it called the U.S. Border Patrol. There are new dream survey fires in Ontario with a little cicada symbol at the bottom right corner. There are now Futel phone booths popping up in Detroit as well.
I mean, that's
maybe
like,
it's a good, maybe
they're
it's
pranking
good.
Border Patrol. They're listing Border Patrol as concentration camps, which is true. So
yes,
I don't
exactly.
know. It feels
it is. But you wonder, like, I don't know. I want to believe that it's a good thing because, like, we said it sounds very night call, but I'm also so used to everything this year being a bad thing that I immediately jump to the conclusion that it's somehow nefarious.
I think you get into a little bit, you can get into some dicey territory as we've explored with, you know, some of our internet era cults and cult adjacent things, that if you start to imitate or go meta on conspiracy stuff, like you're kind of cosplaying being a part of a conspiracy or a cult or something like that, but not like, you know, kind of a little disingenuously, I think you can run into some dicey territory. But
well, it's funny. It's funny when it overlaps with like performance art. Yeah. That is the strangest. A friend of ours worked on a Marina Abramovic thing that was like a commercial for Microsoft or something, that when they put it up online, it got so many QAnon comments.
That's exactly what I was talking about with the QAnon thing. It's just like anything can be considered satanic or whatever.
But then also like Microsoft took it down because they were like, we don't want our brand associated with like Satanism and pedophilia. And that's all the comments are now.
Marina Abramovic, who knew that she would be the patron saint of Satanism and pedophilia.
Well, she's not in, you know, she's not like into it though. She's
but they like, you know, there were parties or whatever where she was doing pieces, you know.
I just feel like other artists would be like, yes, that's right. I am like the high priest of Satan or whatever. Sure. But she is seems confused by the fact that people are reading that into her work, even though as an artist, really can't control what people read into your work.
Nope. Shall we take another night email?
Hell yeah.
This one is from Kevin. We'll read this. Kevin writes, hello, night call. It's 8:33 p.m. in Pittsburgh, and I'm a longtime listener, first-time writer-inner. So this study, and he links out to it, just came out saying that if we were ever able to time travel, we could go into the past without creating a paradox. For example, if you wanted to stop COVID from happening, you could go back in time and make it so the first person doesn't get it. But no matter what you do, somebody else would eventually get COVID. And then things from there would develop basically exactly the same. So you could minimally change the past, but not in a significant way. And because of that, you couldn't destroy the reason you traveled back in time in the first place. Therefore, no paradox. Makes sense. And then I thought of the Mandela effect. The Mandela effect is the wacky internet theory that says sometimes when there are tiny differences in culture, it isn't that you are remembering these events wrong, it's that somehow the timeline has been slightly disrupted. Examples of this include the Bernstein Bears, the two different spellings of Bernstein Bears, and that movie where Shaq played a rapping genie, but people say it wasn't Shaq, it was the actor-comedian Sinbad playing the rapping genie. Full disclosure, I'm not sure if the genie raps, I just assumed he did. Is that Shazam? I don't remember. Anyway, a lot of people say this is crazy. It isn't the reality changing, but an example of faulty memories. They're probably right. However, what if this theory that says if time travel happens, it can't cause significant changes, but it can cause tiny, inconsequential ones, is true? It's a real thinker, Kevin. Thank you. You know, the Mandela effect is based on this sort of thing that a bunch of people remembered that Nelson Mandela died at a time that he did not. I believe that's what it is. It's named for this false memory that apparently a lot of people have, that he died. I had this recently about the actor Christopher Lloyd, because I was watching both Addams Family movies for the second time this year, because time is right. And I mentioned like, oh man, it's so sad that he died, to whoever I was with. And they were like, really? I didn't know that he died. And then I checked it and he didn't die. And I completely remember Christopher Lloyd dying when I was a kid. I don't know. If anybody shares this memory, we might have another Mandela effect on our hands. But
I do not remember Christopher Lloyd dying. I think that one belongs only to you.
That's just in my little brain.
I think some of these things too are like maybe rumors that predate before you could fact check rumors. So for me, I'm like, I remember someone telling me that like somebody from Saved by the Bell had died in a horrible car crash. And that was like a rumor in seventh grade or something that you couldn't disprove at the time.
Yeah.
And weird things could go viral like that organically because they were just like school, playground QAnons.
Yeah, they used to just be urban legends. Yeah.
The Berenstain Bears one seems pretty obvious to me, which is that anytime there's someone with a name that is spelled like, you know, differently than you'd expect, especially if you're a kid and you hear your parents pronouncing it, you're probably like looking at the front of the book and like mentally kind of editing it and like correcting it. I know that I have relatives whose names are often misspelled, like almost always misspelled, to the point where they have other family members with different last names, or, you know, friends that they've had forever and they still address them with the wrong spelling of their name, which drives me nuts. But I guess that's just one of those things. But the like rapping genie or non-rapping genie one, I'm like, oh, okay. Was that, like Emily said, are you talking about Shazam? Which was it? Who was it in Shazam? Was it Shaq or Sinbad?
I think it was, I mean, I think also some of these things just show the power of groupthink, which is that if somebody is like, yeah, hey, does anybody remember this thing? A lot of people will be like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Oh, sorry, it was Kazam.
Oh, Kazam. Okay, yeah. I entered Shazam and I was like, Shazam
is a recent film. Yes.
Okay, so Kazam. So that was referring to the movie Kazam, and
that
in Kazam.
Shaq. Yeah. It's Shaq.
But if you enter Kazam Sinbad, are you going to get a ton of hits there?
I don't know.
Yeah, some of these things too, it's like they're so minor, you know, they're not like some people think World War II ended and other people don't or something. It's not like true alternate history. It's like these very small, weird things. For me, the Berenstain Bears one, which is always used as like the example, I was like, well, I think I just kind of made it like a Jewish last name. And then it turns out it's not. It's like made by Christians.
Right.
So that seems very easy to explain to me.
Okay, wait, guys. I found the movie. Spoiler alert, the Shazam movie never existed. Sinbad's, yeah, Shazam. And it's Shazam with two A's in, yeah, a second. It says, in a May 2020 interview, actor and sports star Shaquille O'Neal stated that if kids wanted to see him and Sinbad team up as Kazam and Shazam in an Avengers-style genie movie, he'd put on that hilarious 90s costume and do it. There's one problem, though. The so-called Sinbad genie movie doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I'm super into believing this theory that these minor differences happen because of time travel, mostly just because right now I would love to time travel.
I just watched 12 Monkeys last night, so very in that mindset.
Isn't, yeah, this also like the plot of that movie Yesterday?
Where the, like, Beatles didn't, yeah, exist, so you have to invent them?
Yeah.
I mean, 12 Monkeys did make me think about it a lot, kind of logically, about if you did go back to, say, January and tell everybody there was about to be a plague, who would listen to you?
Well, I've been exploring this at length. I won't bore you guys with all of the details, but I will bore you with some, which is that if you were going to time travel back to January, you would have to have a list of early examples. You would have to have predictions that you could prove yourself with that happened in January. So you'd have to do your homework before you time traveled. Because if you were going to time travel to, say, like January 2nd or something, you would have to have predictions ready to go for like the 2nd, the 3rd, the 4th, and the 5th. So people would believe you. And only at that point could you introduce something like predicting coronavirus. And actually, you'd have to go back earlier than January, probably, because coronavirus, some say, might have already been circulating, yeah, even in LA in like December or
might
January.
Might have been out of the bag already. Yeah. I mean, it's also like, you know, we have some examples of non-time traveling instances of this, like the Bob Woodward thing, you know, in his interview with Trump, where he basically acknowledged that they knew that it was dangerous and he just didn't want to cause a panic or whatever. And it's just like, that's about as close as you could get to like time traveling and changing the outcome of it. But it's like the wrong people are doing it.
Right.
And also maybe there's nothing that can be like, what would you do? Would you just like barge into, I don't know, the CDC and I don't know, what would you'd have to use some like very dire threats in order to get things through, I feel like.
You would go find the original pangolin.
Yeah.
And release it into the wild instead. Make sure that it doesn't talk to any humans.
Was it a pangolin?
Allegedly.
Allegedly a pangolin.
People at first thought it was a bat. And I follow a lot of bat enthusiasts who were like, yeah. Don't blame bats.
Everyone always blames the bat.
It's not the bat's fault. Even if a zoonotic disease jumps to humans, it's not because the bats are like trying to kill all humans. It's because of climate change and humans going into parts of the environment that they shouldn't have and, you know, burning down forests and stuff. It's always humans.
I know.
Which 12 Monkeys also gets into a lot. Some good on-point stuff in 12 Monkeys.
I haven't seen that in a second, man.
Watch it. It feels like now, but it does also have that. I mean, I feel like there was that time period when the virus was in other countries, but it hadn't made it to America yet, where I was just like sitting in my car every day feeling insane, being like, what can I do, you know, before it gets here?
It reminds me of when you know that you're getting sick, which if you can't tell, I am right now. And you're just like, don't get sick. Don't get sick. And you're trying to do everything you possibly can to not get sick. Like you're taking all the like, you know, weird supplements,
massaging,
you're
drinking a ton of water.
Yep. Massaging your nodes. But you know it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that was how we all felt here when we were like, OK, it's spreading everywhere. It's like obviously going to happen to us soon, too. So we just have to, like, not have that happen.
Yeah.
A friend of mine invented a time travel theory that I really liked. They may have been on drugs when they invented it, but it involved the idea that jokes are a way of time traveling because when you tell a joke, like, let's say you tell a knock-knock joke and you're like, knock-knock, and the person's like, who's there? It's because they jump ahead to what they think the punchline's going to be. They're jumping into the future, and then when it's something different than they thought, time splits.
You mean the anticipation? You mean it's just like a quantum type split?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, the same can be said for anything.
Like a conversation.
All respect to your friend who's definitely on drugs. But we're causing rifts we're causing quantum rifts right now as we speak. A butterfly is flapping its wings.
It just really makes you think about what quantum rift could you cause that would make things go a better way. But things like 12 Monkeys in general, time travel theory tends to say that you can't change anything. Whatever you change is going to be counter-changed in some way, or is going to be what was meant to happen all along.
Yeah, yeah.
There's sort of it's crazy because time travel, you would think, would be more about being able to fix things and change things. But I think within most time travel theories, there's sort of an acceptance that certain things are fixed, that you can't change.
That's what the big anti-time travel lobby wants you to think.
Let's expose them.
Yeah. Here at Time-Anon, we think time is whatever you want it
time
to be.
Time is a construct.
Especially because what day is it ever now?
I know. Yeah. It's always
it's
March
fall.
95th. Should we take one more night call before we wrap up? Or night email, so to speak?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's do it.
This is a night call from Emma. Hi, night call. I was catching up on older episodes, and your discussion of whether or not Airbnbs were haunted reminded me of something that happened to me last winter. At the end of last year, my extended family rented an Airbnb cabin for the weekend. It wasn't totally remote, not a cabin in the woods type of situation, but definitely not in a densely populated area. The cabin itself was mostly decorated in the personalityless Airbnb style, subway tile kitchen, West Elmy furniture. But we started to notice one odd thing. The place was absolutely filled with evil eye pendants, and things like these with an example that we'll put in the show notes. They were literally everywhere, on top of every doorframe or archway, multiple in every room, about three by the front and back doors. It seemed totally out of place from the rest of the design, unless these are some kind of hip decoration trend that I'm unaware of. Already a little spooky, but the truly spooky thing happened on the last night we were there. I'm woken up by a dog barking in the distance. We hadn't heard any neighbor's dogs the past few days. Then I hear a soft humming outside, not any recognizable tune. It sounded like someone is circling the house while humming. It pauses for a little and I hear it again. This time it sounds like it's coming from the living room and hallways. Now, I know one of my family members has insomnia, so I peek outside my door to see if they were awake and being accidentally incredibly creepy. But when I investigate the living room, no one's there. I don't hear the humming again after that. I asked about it the next day and no one else heard anything. We leave the next day as planned and nothing else like this has happened to me since. I don't even really believe in ghosts, just the natural creepiness of a chaotic universe. But who knows? Thought you guys might enjoy this story.
This is so scary. This is really creepy to me. I get goosebumps already. This email, mostly the humming thing, but also I think evil eye pendants give me the willies. I don't know.
Well, as we've discussed, Airbnbs should give you the willies because they are haunted by the people they've displaced.
Yes. Although I think evil eyes are meant to repel evil, yeah. Right?
Yeah. But I think, I don't know, there's something about them being hung which tells me that there was a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a reason they've been hung. And like my guess after the story would be that like whatever this humming thing was and this presence that this person felt, the owner of the Airbnb hung these pendants because of it. And so it's like, even though the pendants themselves are meant to ward it off, it just tells me like there's an issue here. Like there's a drip.
Oh, totally.
there's also nothing creepier than tuneless humming.
Whole thing gives me the creeps. Eek!
I just rewatched Midsommar the other day. And I was talking with my husband about Hereditary, which we both agreed we thought was scarier. And the reason that we thought it was scarier was because of the clicking, the tongue clicking.
Hereditary. Mm-hmm. Is terrifying. Yeah. Midsommar's scary, but it's more funny.
It's funnier, but also like I really like both the devices in both movies of the clicking and the weird breath thing in Midsommar, yeah, being used to convey like something really off-putting or unsettling. And I think that humming is like potentially even more unsettling than those things. The humming is, there's something of like the, yeah, like Molly said, the tunelessness where it's like a something trying to imitate a person.
Yeah, because it's a human sound that could exist pre-speech, you know?
Like it's, yeah, exactly.
It's a human.
Pre-speech, sweet peach.
Oh!
We solved it.
Is that it?
Oh, my God.
It's the sound of a person trying to come out of the wavelengths, human voice.
Do you guys think whistling or humming is scarier?
I think tuneless humming is the scariest. I mean, I'd be scared if I was somewhere desolate and I heard some whistling.
I think the humming is scarier. When I think of humming, I also think of like, you know, like keening, which is always like a, you know, that's such a like ancient sort of mourning practice. And it just feels so like you're accessing these roots of like the very beginning of humanity that is always kind of like, where do we come from? I don't know.
Yeah. I think there's that. And there's also, it could be an electronic hum. You know, it could be something that's kind of like a synthesized human, some noise that's kind of almost like electrical, but also imitating a person. Now I've gotten the creeps. Now I've caught whatever Emily caught from this email.
It's a lawnmower man. It's your lawnmower trying to become a man.
Well, I am so grateful to Emma for sending us this story, just because we had to kick off spooky October some way or another. So this, you know, now I've had my first spook of the month. Thank you to all of our listeners who called in and wrote in and shared your night calls and emails and thoughts with us this week. We love doing an all-call episode. It's so fun. We'll be back next week. Maybe we'll have some more information to sort through vis-a-vis POTUS COVID. I like to say POTUS COVID. It's just rolls off the tongue. But yeah, that does it for us this week.
Does it drive you crazy just thinking about like, what if you could just jump 1 month into the future and know what happens and tell everybody?
Yes, yeah. It drives me crazy every day thinking of that.
Yeah. Speaking of time travel.
We would also love it if you would give us some reviews.
Take a minute or two to give us a review on Apple Podcasts. Write something nice. We love it.
And keep giving us your calls and emails at 240-46-NIGHT and nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. We love taking calls from the public And thanks to our Australian night call listeners. We love the international night calls because it's always night somewhere.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Australia is the one place that's actually probably night whenever we're recording. So,
oh, that's true.
It's truly a night call in Australia. you can also follow us on social media, Night Call Pod on Twitter, Night Call Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and join our Patreon at patreon.com/nightcall, where you can get bonus episodes and our newsletter and playlists. And we've got a new playlist and newsletter coming soon, so if you join now, you can hop on that train. We will see you.